meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. You'll know Wendy Murphy is a victims' rights, sex crimes expert, violence against women and children's advocate, and, of course, the author of the best-selling book, And Justice for Some. I thought I'd bring on Wendy tonight to talk domestic violence. We're going to talk Haley. We're going to talk Kaylee, and fill the next 25 minutes with information that you are craving to hear. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, Dana. Good to be with you.
TMZ, that well-known website, actually is reporting that Rihanna and Chris Brown have moved in back with each other. I just saw that a few minutes ago, got an update from them. I personally don't have a problem with the picture itself being released. We're talking about the battered picture or a picture of a battered Rihanna being released to the press. I do have a bit of a problem with the leak aspect of that, and we'll get into that in a minute, but I'm curious your thoughts on Rihanna, and you wrote an interesting article about that, and we'll get into that too in a minute.
Yeah, boy, you know, where to begin? The first thing is, you don't want anyone who's already suffered a brutal act of violence to suffer at the hands of the justice system, and it's probably the number one thing I fight about and write about and scream about, and it's the big feature of my book. Probably every chapter has something in there about how the system beats up on people who've suffered enough and how uncivilized of us and so forth. To claim that we have the best legal system in the world and to be doing brutal things to people who are innocent and have suffered and then call it justice, it's just grotesque. Now, all that said, it's true, probably Rihanna would not have preferred to have the release of that photo occur when it did. Maybe she might have tolerated it better later. But the truth of the matter is, one of the reasons women feel bad about the release of information about acts of violence in the home, whether it's sexual or domestic violence, is because society makes them feel bad about it, as if it's their fault, as if they deserve to feel shame, as if they, shouldn't stand proud because somebody hit them. And it's just so counterintuitive to me that if there's any shame to go around, and there is plenty of shame in brutal acts of violence, but it 100% of it goes to the bad guy, which sometimes is a woman, but in this case is alleged to have been her boyfriend, Chris Brown. He gets 100% of the blame because he's the one who hit her. He's the one who was charged. And any time you make a woman or the victim feel bad, you necessarily reduce that 100% responsibility. And when it comes to crime, you know, it's an all-or-nothing proposition. You're either guilty or you're not guilty. You're not a little bit guilty.
Yeah.
Unlike in civil courtroom cases where blame can be distributed. You're 20% responsible. This other person's 30% responsible. You can do math all day long about who deserves a little bit of the blame, and it gets divided up financially, who should pay how much. That's not true in crime. In crime, it's just one person is charged, and they're either guilty or they're not guilty. And the reason for that is very important. We don't want to send a message that certain types of people, in this case females, should be less protected against criminal violence than other types of people. But if you set up this judgmental system where you think, oh, she should feel a little bit bad, it's kind of like saying, well, you know, women are second-class citizens. They share the responsibility when somebody hits them. So I take this very seriously as an academic. I fight in the courts about it a lot. And I think as a culture, and when it's a high-profile case, we have a duty to have an honest and open conversation about why, although it's true, Rihanna probably feels bad about the disclosure of the photo, and it even may be true that it's a violation of law enforcement policy to have distributed it. I think the truth is much more important. Painful though it might be, it's not as painful as violence. We have a cultural and a systemic disease when it comes to fighting violence against women, we're horrible at it. We disproportionately fail to redress targeted violence against women and children, and part of the explanation for that is the extent to which we treat it as a private or shameful matter. We have to stop that, and part of the path towards stopping that is getting beyond the idea that it's shameful and private. So that's one of the reasons I encourage public disclosure. But the other thing is, you don't want the perpetrator to be able to mislead the public in a high-profile case to believe that what happened wasn't so awful. Chris Brown had his PR people spinning stuff right out of the box. Oh, he's going to counseling. He's talking to a priest. He wants to get help. That's fine. But, you know, if you're using your own access to the media to spew propaganda in a way that generates sympathy for you and you're the bad guy, I think the public has a right to know what the real deal is, rather than just saying to itself, oh, well, you know, maybe it wasn't so bad and he seems like a nice guy and after all he's getting help. Oh, let's give him a discount. Let's dismiss the charges. No, let's first hear the whole truth and then we, the people, can figure out whether our legal system is dealing responsibly with the charges and that the outcome is indeed fair and just. So that's the reason I'm glad it's out there. It's an epidemic. The nature of personal violence, whether it's in a family or a dating relationship, there's so much of it that we don't hear about because it often happens behind closed doors. Victims are easy to silence and to coerce into silence, especially if you're a person of some public celebrity. You worry extra that you're going to lose your status in your business. And, you know, for those extra concerns that people have, you have to take into account that the private nature of where it occurs, I think, requires us to be extra careful when we hear about it, to be shining an extra antiseptic light on what it looks like, because the chances that we're going to have to see the truth about the kind of violence that happens behind closed doors, they're so small. The number of chances we have to see the truth are so limited that we have to look extra hard, shine an extra bright light on those occasions when we can, because understanding the nature of the epidemic is a very important and first step toward putting a stop to it.
And you used the term culture, and I like that term because there's a culture not only with the public, but there's that culture and how it's perceived even with the courts, DAs, defense attorneys, how they spin it right from the get-go. We have judges that just fail miserably when it comes to dealing with domestic violence, and an incident in the jurisdiction I live in here right now, where we have a murder we're dealing with, where both the husband and the wife had been put on conditions not to contact each other. A judge said, that's okay, just don't talk to each other, and now one has killed the other one. Now, can you prevent that? No, but there's that lackadaisical old-time thinking with some on the bench, and I'm sure you cover that in your book, when it comes to domestic violence, Wendy, and that's a big part of this, because it's so high-profile. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you touch on such an important issue, which is that our judges are the ultimate source of protection for the value system that we think we live by. And if a judge doesn't endorse the idea that violence in the home is a very serious source of wrongdoing and treats it instead as, you know, spitting on the sidewalk, then that disconnect is very problematic because it's hard to hold judges accountable once they've made the wrong judgment. How do you fix judges? I don't know, but I do know that the way we select them is far too political and far less, responsible. That is, you know, if you know in the United States, if you know the governor, you're going to get a job, as opposed to if you're qualified.
Right.
And you can have all kinds of biases about violence against women. You can be a judge you can get through the process of being selected to be a judge and never once be asked the question, do you think it's okay for a man to rape his wife? Or do you think, you know, a man who pushes his girlfriend around or slaps her around is committing a serious crime or a not so serious crime? Because we don't screen them for those kind of biases, they then get the jobs where they're allowed to make dumb statements like, oh, just don't talk to each other, just try to be nice to each other, without a real understanding of the dynamics and and the risk of violence that can and too often does lead to death. You know, I think, Dana, that one of the answers to the problem has to be tied to the data, and one of the real problems is we don't look at the data very well. In this country in particular, Canada's actually doing better, believe it or not, than the United States. It shouldn't surprise anyone to hear that. The United States is actually less egalitarian when it comes to violence against women and women's equality in general than Canada. But I think that won't surprise people. But when it comes to violence, there really shouldn't be a pecking order of who we like more or less, who we value more or less, such that crimes against property, men's property, for example, are punished more harshly than crimes against women or children. And yet that's what you see in the data. The problem, again, is we know this to be true. We know that if you commit a property crime, on average, you're going to get a much tougher sentence than if you commit a crime against a woman. And we've seen it over and over again for decades. And despite that it's an epidemic, we don't call violence against women a hate crime in the United States. We don't punish it as a civil rights matter. We don't recognize the citizenship and subjugation, the failure of equal citizenship and the subjugation problems that come from a systematic failure to redress targeted violence against women. And no one's doing anything about it. That's what's really frustrating. We're not measuring it. We're not consistently saying, hey, wait a minute, how many women are dying in their homes? What are we doing wrong? Are you kidding me? We punish property crimes more harshly than this? Why? Where is the outrage? Who's failing to do the political mobilization necessary to make enough noise that we can change these things? You know, we've done a pretty good job screaming and yelling when it comes to targeted violence against people based on race. We do a very good job in this country screaming and yelling when there's targeted violence against a Muslim. But you attack a woman because she's female, and it's like you've, you know, shoplifted a loaf of bread. And that disparity, too, is very frustrating because we claim in our Equal Protection Clause and in our Constitution, we claim as a nation to care first and foremost about people being free to walk around with equality in society. At a minimum, that should mean you shouldn't be more likely to get attacked, beaten, raped because of your gender. And yet we don't even come close to dealing responsibly with the fact that women are probably targeted for violence based on gender more than any other class of people is targeted for violence based on some other characteristic of their human nature.
Wendy Murphy's here, and we're talking about, of course, Rihanna and Chris Brown. Let's talk about the photograph. I've interviewed Denise Brown several times about domestic violence, about her sister, and we can all remember seeing Nicole Brown's picture after the fact, howbeit. Here we have
a similar picture, isn't it? It reminded me of that picture, and I know Denise pretty well, met her several times, and I just admire her work so much, but it's funny you should say that. I thought instantly, isn't that so uncanny, the resemblance between that photograph we saw of Nicole and this photograph of Rihanna. There is a lot of similarity in terms of the way women are beaten, and we don't even talk about it, much less see these photographs often enough. I'm sorry to interrupt, Dana.
No, and that's where I was going with this, is the eeriness of seeing the two pictures, and I actually did a side-by-side on my computer screen, and I was blown away by it. But there's the, you know, one was an after, this one is a before. We have the whole issue of the leak process. I'm hoping that the leak in this case, and there's nothing we can do about that, that happens in cases like this, wasn't just a celebrity beaten by her boyfriend. Let's see what we can get monetarily for the picture if we let it out. I'm actually quite impressed with Harvey Levin and those at TMZ for posting it along the lines of, look, here's what domestic violence can do. It's just not the schlocky paparazzi saying, look who had an ice cream cone and was picking their nose. They actually took something that's important in today's society and ran with it. Let's talk about the leak aspect here. What happened? What do you think? Why it was released?
Well, you know, I might disagree with you a bit here about whether a leak is even the right word. I suppose it's close to the right word,
right,
in the sense that it was in a file that someone had described as confidential, and then all of a sudden it was out.
Sure. Yeah.
But what I've challenged is the characterization of the photograph as a leak because of the premise implicit in the word leak, which is that it was, as a matter of law, mm-hmm. a private photograph. You know, crime, when it happens, whether it's crime that happens behind closed doors or crime in the middle of Main Street, it is a public concern. It is investigated and prosecuted with my tax dollars and the public's money, and it is handled in a public courtroom and covered by the public media. And to characterize any feature of a public event as private, I think is downright silly, outright silly. However, even if, you know, you want to say, well, but it was under the investigation phase at the moment the picture came out, because there is an exception to the public records rule, and I want to be clear about this. The public records rule applies to all crime, all criminal investigative evidence. In other words, any member of the public can and should be able to walk into a courthouse or a police station and say, I want to see the evidence. Mm-hmm. It's the public's stuff. But there are a couple of exceptions, none of which apply here. There's no confidentiality in the face of a victim of battering, because indeed that's a picture of the crime scene. Her face is the crime scene.
It's the evidence.
Just like you can't characterize the first World Trade Center bombing and all the photographs that we saw of that crime scene, you wouldn't characterize those photographs as private.
No.
They were photos of the crime scene. Her face is the crime scene. It's a public incident. So I don't like the fact that people have characterized it as a leak, because the presumption should be it is public information, public evidence. And if the defense wants to complain about, well, what about my fair trial rights? And, you know, we do have to worry about the fair trial rights of the accused. But there's nothing implicitly prejudicial about releasing the photograph. We'd already heard that she was badly beaten at the time the picture was released, so it's not like it was a secret that she'd been beaten about the head and so forth. And, you know, if the defendant wants to complain that it's unfair, the jury's going to prejudge the case, those jurors who would prejudge the case will be excluded from the jury when the time comes. And if the defendant's really worried about the fairness of the jury selection process, the defendant and his PR team should shut the hell up.
Mm-hmm.
They're issuing press statements and they're saying he's going to find God and he's getting treatment. You know, there's no constitutional right to distort the public's understanding of a crime only to the advantage of the accused, and everybody else has to play nice in the sandbox. There's no constitutional right like that. So, you know, I understand that Rihanna, just like a lot of domestic violence victims, might not like the information to be out there. But if you look at it as a legal question, forget about it. There's nothing private about it. It doesn't mean I don't care about Rihanna's feelings, but if she were my client, and I represent a lot of battered women, if she were my client, I would say, darling, this is nothing for you to be ashamed of.
Yeah.
It is not you who should feel shame. It is Chris Brown who should feel shame.
No,
your picture is the face of domestic violence, a silent epidemic. You shouldn't be proud that it's out there, but you should understand the value it has, and it is the fault of Chris Brown, thus the burden of Chris Brown, to deal with what it looks like, not you, darling.
Yeah, and the good that it will do. Let's go to Drew Peterson for a minute. Drew Peterson comes on programs, including mine, and complains about how the media makes him look like a monster. His attorney says that the media is trying the case, yet Drew Peterson goes on every show that he can to say that, now that he's announced his engagement and he's challenged Geraldo Rivera to a bare-knuckle boxing match, kind of like Danny Bonaducci and Barry Williams did a few years back. So one has to look at the stupidity of what Brodsky and Peterson are doing, the hypocritical nature of it, and say, okay, enough's enough. This has now become a sideshow, a la Leonard Padilla and Kaylee Anthony, and how much is the media to blame for allowing this kind of stuff to happen, myself included?
Well, you know, it's a tough question because there's a kind of symbiotic, if exploitive, relationship between the sources of information and the media's desire to print it, both to sell papers and to just get the truth out. As one of my friends in the business said to me many years ago, I know you're trying to use me for your purposes. Well, I'm going to use you for mine. And it's a mutually satisfying relationship in that regard. I don't really have any qualms about that, because the objective goal should always be to unveil the full truth.
Yep.
And you can't live in call yourself civilized, live in a legal system and in a culture where only one side gets to speak. And yet our legal system really does over facilitate the manipulation of the media from the defense side. And there are a couple of good reasons for this, and I write about this a lot in my book. You know, the defense can just make stuff up and lie, and whether it's Drew Peterson, Scott Peterson, Michael Jackson, you know, name it. Anyone who has the power to manipulate public opinion because the media thinks what they have to say is valuable. If you're the defendant and you want to just go on television shows and lie, like we saw with Scott Peterson and Diane Sawyer, he just lied. And the media was only too happy to play it because people watched and it sells tickets. And the benefit to the defense is he's taken the fifth with the cops, right? He's refused and asserted his right against self-incrimination, so he can't tell his story to law enforcement and get his story out to the public that way, because he knows if he speaks to the cops, he's screwed. They know the truth. They'll be able to uncover the truth as he's lying through his teeth. So he can't speak to them. He clams up. He can go on Diane Sawyer's show, though, and she doesn't have the file in front of her. She doesn't have the access to evidence. She doesn't have the capacity to cross-examine him. So he gets, in a sense, a one-way ticket to PR street and manipulation of the potential jury pool and the court of public opinion. And that just drives me crazy, because there are no punishments. You cannot punish someone like Scott Peterson for lying to the public. There's no sanction for that. Even if his lawyer went public and said crazy things, there's very little you can do to the defense attorney for the same kind of dog and pony show. We saw it with Mark Garagos. You know, Michael Jackson's lawyers did it to a great degree. Sometimes it's from a shill, not the lawyer directly, but a friend of the lawyer.
Right.
The point is, you cannot punish the defendant or his lawyer when they lie and distort the truth and manipulate the potential jury pool. If a prosecutor or a cop says anything about the real truth, there's a potentially very big sanction. The defense will run into court, motion to suppress the evidence, motion to dismiss the case. Why? To punish the prosecutor, punish the state, punish the cops for revealing the truth in advance of the trial, which is prejudicial to my client. Shame on them. Dismiss the charges, judge. Punish the government for telling the truth. And this is the nature of our legal system, that you can be the defense and lie, like we saw in the Kobe Bryant trial. Kobe Bryant's lawyer said that statement publicly about the victim having sex with three men in 3 days. It was an absolute lie.
Yep.
It nevertheless went out. When the victim's private attorney corrected the record a couple days later and issued a press statement saying that was an absolutely false statement, the judge hauled that lawyer into court and said, I told you there's a gag order in this case. If you say another word publicly, I'm going to throw you in jail for contempt.
Mm-hmm.
That's the moral of the story. In the Kobe Bryant trial, the defense attorney lied and there was no punishment. In fact, she got all kinds of, you know, pats on the back for being a great lawyer. It doesn't require, you know, lying doesn't make you a great lawyer. It makes you a jerk. But you don't get in trouble. So she got to lie with impunity.
Yeah.
And the victim's attorney attempted to correct the false statement with an issuance of a true statement and got threatened with jail. That's what I don't like about the scene right now with Rihanna and Chris Brown. He's issuing statements saying he's going to find God, he's trying to get help,
sure,
and he's
yeah.
trying to stroke the public to feel for him. And I don't agree that he should be allowed to do that, but I'll tell you this much. If he does do it, the law enforcement side has a duty, in my opinion, to leak like a sieve
yep.
with the truth.
Yep.
Send the truth out, because
yep.
it's fair.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. Wendy's book is And Justice for Some. You can just click on the link in the show notes. Wendy, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Mine too, Dana. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Wendy Murphy, and if there's anyone that can tell it like it is, that's our dear Wendy. And, you know, getting back to Peterson, I'll invite anybody on this program. I don't care if they're suspected in a crime or have been alleged to have done something, and they want to get their side of the story out, and they want to even criticize and say that they're not being treated fairly. But when it becomes a sideshow and it becomes all about them and a joke, then it turns south with me real fast. We're going to take a break. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be back with criminal profiler Pat Brown, and we'll continue on with our discussion about domestic violence, Rihanna, Chris Brown, and other cases that are out there in the news. We'll be right back.
It's the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. And now back to the show.
Okay, we're back. We're going to continue on with our discussion into domestic violence, and in particular the Chris Brown and Rihanna escapade that went on, the release of the picture. And like I said earlier, it's being reported on TMZ that Chris Brown and Rihanna have moved back in together. I thought I'd bring on one of my favorite guests, Pat Brown. She's a criminal profiler, to discuss that and other high-profile cases in the news. Hi, Pat. How are you?
And I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm fine. Welcome back to the program. I've made it very clear my thoughts on the picture itself being released. I think it's a good thing. I do have a problem with the leak aspect of it, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But might as well start off just with that. We've seen the picture. I posted it up on my computer here with a picture of Nicole Brown Simpson and the after picture, because we never saw Nicole, sadly, until after she was gone, and to this picture, and I found them eerily similar, and there's nothing different about domestic violence. It's a terrible thing, and pictures paint a thousand words, I think is what the saying is.
Well, you know, it's just one of these things. You take a look at that picture of Rihanna and you say to yourself, and why is she sitting next to this man now with her arm around him?
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty sad, because that's unfortunately a terrible message to get out to people, that this is a person that you return to. And I've seen a lot of people blogging on the net, and you've got a good portion of people who say, she's nuts, don't go back. No, if he's going to do it again. And then you've got these other people who say, hey, you know, we shouldn't judge them. Let them work out their relationship. Things happen between people.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think things happen like a man punching a woman in the face.
No.
I'm sorry, that's a little extreme. You know, so, you know, the fact that would be an acceptable thing, even if she irritated him or annoyed him, or even if she threw a phone at his head, the fact that he would beat her to this level, it's hard to understand that people think this is just okay, and they can work it out. And my opinion is, no, this is a person you get away from, and if he wants to work it out, he goes to a therapist and he gets his, you know, works on anger management and how to behave and treat people, and in theory, maybe he'll become a better person, and maybe somebody else will, you know, have a relationship with him that isn't volatile. But we already know right here it is.
Yeah.
And the fact that he doesn't have to do anything but to be back with her already, that spells trouble to me.
Oh, yeah, and anyone with 5 minutes investigative experience knows that this probably wasn't the first time. Now, can I say that with 100% certainty? No, but I can say that in my experience as an investigator, the first time, and then the picture and all this sort of stuff, she's taken pictures of herself, or somebody took a picture of her, or that's an evidence picture, or who knows where the picture came from. We'll assume it's an evidence picture, but this isn't the first time that this has happened between the two of them, Pat. But
well, there's certainly something that probably happened before this, and we usually see an escalation.
Yep.
That, you know, first person yells, and then they realize that they don't get as much as they want by yelling, so then they push, and then they slap, and then they work their way. So to me, I mean, if you see something working in a direction, which is becoming more and more violent, more and more angry, you can pretty much assume that unless you're never going to have another disagreement in the entirety of your life,
mm-hmm.
and that person is never going to view you in a negative way ever again, the next time it's going to be worse, because they're frustrated that they didn't succeed last time in getting total control of you, so it's going to continue to go down that road. And so when you start seeing that slide in that direction, you should get the heck out of there, because it's not going to turn around.
I like to use the term big shot bandit, and these guys that have lots of money, lawyers that speak for them, all of a sudden Chris Brown is in anger management before much of the case is even disclosed to the press. The lawyers spin it to try and take as much heat off of their client as they can. And the way that the people look at it, Pat, is, you know, there's still a lot of old fuddy-duddies out here, and some people that are young that don't consider domestic violence a huge problem. It's a thing thing, like you say, a private thing between a man and a woman, but really it's not. It's an epidemic. The courts are failing dealing with it. And all of a sudden now you have a case like this in the media, and she's back with him. People will say, well, she's crazy not to go back because of all the money and all that stuff, and now he's taking anger management. And but there's such a bigger picture than this, is there not?
Yeah, you know, I think we just see a kind of a scary new trend where there's a kind of a sexual excitement to violence.
Mm-hmm.
And like you think of a Kill Bill movie, you know, where the woman is tough and the guy is tough, and the woman goes against the guy and the guy goes against the woman. They, you know, try to beat each other up. You know, they're beating each other up and they're attacking each other and sword fighting or whatever. Oh, no, hey, what's that, Mr. and Mrs. Well, I'm thinking of Brad Pitt.
Mm-hmm.
Angelina Jolie, Mr. and Mrs.
Jones.
Come on, give me the name of the movie.
I can't remember it. I know what you mean.
Yeah. And you know, they try to kill each other. And there's a scene in the movie where at the end where they are trying, they're still trying to kill each other, and they're beating each other up, and they're stabbing at each other, and right at the end they both end up in each other's arms, kissing and all this stuff. You think, okay, wait, we just try to kill each other.
Mm-hmm.
But that, I think, has become a new kind of trend among young people, thinking that's pretty cool. It's like, yeah, they're fighting each other, but they love each other.
Yeah. You know, it's so sad, and hopefully there'll be some good out of this case come forward. Maybe it'll bring more attention. The more attention that can be brought forward as far as domestic abuse, domestic violence, and the education aspect.
That's a good thing, because yeah. I don't think we're seeing anything going in the right direction on it. So
no.
Personally, I think this is a really big, it's really sad that Rihanna, you know, doesn't just simply speak up and walk out, because then she could set an example that this is unacceptable. But by walking right back in, she's just really done a lot of harm to a whole bunch of young people.
Let's change topics here for a minute. In most communities, Pat, on every street corner you find a stop sign or a mailbox. In some communities in Florida, on every street corner you find a sex offender. Now we have Haley Cummings. Without making light of the case, and by no means am I making light of the case, sometimes when you investigate these things, you look, you know, there's no place like home. You look as close as you can to the area around you. The Lunsford case, poor Jessica was within eyesight of her home. I'm not saying that anyone in the home is responsible for this, but here we have this other tragedy. The whole thing about sexual predators and pedophiles and them running around like crazy. Maybe I'm picking on Florida a little bit, but this is another epidemic, and here we have another child missing.
Yeah, it really is an epidemic, unfortunately, because we don't have serious enough punishment for the people who are committing the crimes. Otherwise, there wouldn't be 44 in the neighborhood of Haley Cummings at all.
Exactly.
There wouldn't be 3, because the other 45 would still be behind bars.
Yep.
So, but we have a very lenient system, and so they're out and running around. Of course, some of those sex offenders aren't, you know, we have to be clear about this. Some of those are probably like a guy that was 19 having fun with a 15-year-old girl, mm-hmm. you know, and so it's not quite, some of those aren't quite as bad as they seem. They're not like, you know, mm-hmm. pedophiles attacking 2 and 3 year old kids. So we're talking about some type of, you know, teenagers that are sometimes caught up in this thing. But we do have an awful lot of them, because our court system isn't keeping them there. But then, of course, when we look at the Haley Cummings case, we have to decide whether it's something that occurred in the house or something that occurred near the house. It's going to be one or the other, because where they're located, for somebody to actually come and take that child, they would have to be very familiar with that house.
Yep.
We're not talking about a case where she was out playing in a playground near the school, and some guy drove by and grabbed her. Even then, usually some guy lives within a mile. But in this particular case, it would have to be somebody very, very familiar with that house to choose to do that.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head when it comes to punishment. I'm a big guy when it comes for accountability. If you do the crime, you should be able to do the time. But there's weak-kneed judges, prosecutors who don't want to run with the case and are so overwhelmed that they plea bargain these things. And you're right. Some of these registered sex offenders, the case itself could be minor, like someone, a 19-year-old and a 15-year-old, whatever. But still, I have a daughter in North Dakota, and you go on the website, and even there, when you click on the neighborhood, you've all seen the websites, and the little dots pop up where the people live. It just makes you feel sick. Although I'm in a country right now where sex offenders have to register, but you can't announce where they are or who they are without permission.
Right.
And there's
they still have their privacy.
There's a privacy thing.
Once they've left prison, they should be able to get a fair chance of starting over again without having people look badly at them, which I've always thought was absolutely ludicrous. Because, I mean, our reputation should go with us everywhere. And that's one of the things that keeps us in line throughout life. You know, when we're 18, 19 years old, in theory, if you know that people are always going to know about you, you can behave better. And if you think that you can get away with things because you can just move and nobody will ever know, which we see more today, then, quite frankly, you can do a lot more terrible things. So I think that, you know, by they should make it very clear that, you know, this will follow you forever. You know, you step over the line. Everybody should always know that.
What these high-profile cases, Kaylee, Casey Anthony, Cummings, all the ones that we keep hearing about, how the media has been dealing with them, overall pretty good, but some of them have turned into sideshows. Drew Peterson, Leonard Padilla, the ones that are bringing
it. I say enough bad things about the man, no.
I would like to see, you know, Drew Peterson, and I tried to get Drew Peterson and Geraldo on my show to talk about his case, but now Drew Peterson wants to wrestle Geraldo or bare-knuckle box him. But I think if he's going to do anything, he should probably wrestle or bare-knuckle box Leonard Padilla, and then we could have quite a pay-per-view event. But when these stories, the tragedy of these stories turns into a sideshow circus like this, it takes away from the big picture, the message that domestic violence is a problem, disappearing children and the deaths there of them, parents killing children, pedophile, all this sort of stuff. But now it becomes the Leonard Padilla show or the Drew Peterson show.
Yeah, well, you know, I think, you know, one of the things that these organizations need to stop telling parents, the missing children's organizations, they need to stop telling parents to grab every appearance that they can possibly grab. I think it's doing great damage, in my personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I think they should have a family spokesperson. I think the police should have a police spokesperson.
Yep.
And that should be it. And they should appear together, and that should be it.
Yep.
And that'll get away from the sideshow circus where we start, you know, becoming a reality TV show, because now you want to see what's the next thing that Ronald Cummings is going to say. What about that Misty? What's she going to come up with? How about that birth mommy?
Yeah.
You know, because I mean, unfortunately, a lot of these people are rather amusing to watch.
Oh, I know.
Sad to say, but you know, whether you know they say crazy things, and it's fun to analyze the behavior and see whether they're lying or they're not lying, or do you believe them or you don't believe them. I mean, it's turned into a really great reality show. So, I mean, quite frankly, you know, the television networks love it because I mean, it's huge viewers amount of viewers that come in and to do this, but. I mean, the families are going out there and doing this stuff. They should have signed a family spokesperson if they want to be taken seriously.
Yep.
And just have people, you know, look at what the case should mean. Then, but you know, it's funny. People don't realize this, but even in tragic circumstances, it's amazing how many people actually want to be on TV.
Oh, I know. Yeah, it's...
No, people don't want to believe that, but I mean, people have this weird thing about TV, even though something terrible has happened to your family, but, oh my gosh, I'm going to be on TV.
Yeah, I know.
This is really what happens.
You know, we all remember the jailhouse release of Casey Anthony talking to Cindy, saying she saw her part on TV, and Cindy almost giggling with delight. Oh, you got to see that, did you? And it became not so much the missing granddaughter, rather than her nightly spot on whatever show that it was, and it's just so tragic. One last question, Pat. And now we have the Cummings case. Tomorrow it could be the Smith case. Who knows where it's going to be, what it's going to be about, but the tragedies continue. Sadly, when media looks at them, they look about young children, they look at dirty cops, they look at all that sort of stuff, but there are many missing people out there. There are many unsolved cases. I get emails about them all the time from families asking if I'll give them time on my program, and I accommodate every one that I can. But when it comes to this, in your thoughts, does the media cherry pick the stories that they will see for get good ratings with? Of course, they're going to do that. And why are they ignoring some of the other cases where people really want the time?
Well, I have to say, I know it's cherry-picked because when I've worked with certain networks and they've said, do you have any unsolved cases, you know, that we might use? And, of course, I do. I have many unsolved cases, and there's some I just really want to see get some time because I think... I know what I do is I analyze it for, will it serve any purpose?
Right.
Not just be a media event, but going on television, will it serve some purpose to this case? And so I usually only suggest the ones I think it would make a difference in. And I'll have some that I really, really want to see. I've been trying for 10 years to get on television. And then they get turned down. And they don't get turned down for a number of reasons. Either the law enforcement isn't real cooperative, and you know television doesn't like to go forth. They got law enforcement that doesn't want to, doesn't want information about the case getting out, maybe because they didn't do such a great job or whatever. And then it's what kind of people do we have? Do we have enough visuals? Is it in a location in the United States people can relate to? Can they relate to the victim?
Sure.
So that's what they do. They're looking for. They look for a story that is going to be popular on television. I mean, after all, it is a ratings game for that type of thing. So they put on a case that nobody cares about, in a location nobody cares about, with a sort of a victim nobody cares about, and the police aren't cooperating. I mean, pretty much it's going to be a dull show. Nobody's going to watch it.
That's right. Yeah.
They don't do it.
You said that.
The way it goes.
You said that very well. It is a ratings game, and we all do the best we can, including yourself. Pat Brown, criminal profiler, you see her weekly on Nancy Grace. Thank you, ma'am.
No, thanks a lot, Dana.
Talk to you again.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we're going to be back with our nightly. Yeah, I wish it was nightly. Our weekly segment with our DA, Robin Sachs. She's an ADA out of Los Angeles County to talk about these high-profile cases. Say that three times real fast. And other things that are in the news. My name's Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
We're back with more of the Dana Pretzer Show on ScaredMonkeysRadio.com.
All right, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name is Dana Pretzer. I'm just having a little telephone difficulty getting a hold of Robin Sachs. Just before we try and get Robin again, just having a little technical difficulty here. I want to talk a little bit about it. I know I maybe harped on a little too much about it in some of the daily commentaries. And for those of you that may be tuning in for the first time, if you go to www.scaredmonkeysradio.com, you can certainly look and listen to any of my past shows, commentaries, etc. And we post those up on the website for, quite a long time. I think shows go back a year or two. Anyway, yeah, you'll hear that I've been talking quite a bit about some of the things that have been happening regarding Drew Peterson and his last appearance on my program with Joel Brodsky. And I came under attack, actually, quite a bit for having him on. Now, I want to make it perfectly clear, and you all know this, that I wanted to have Drew Peterson and Geraldo Rivera on my show, but it wasn't to bare-knuckle box or to wrestle or to play X's and O's and see who wins first. That's not what this is about. This is about an individual who is a suspect in the disappearance of his wife, who's complaining about a high-profile media person trashing him in public. And now it's become almost a circus sideshow with some high-profile media people in Chicago taking it and running with it almost tabloid style. And that, I want to say, is completely wrong. Anyway, one thing I did neglect to share with you in the segment with Wendy Murphy, that you can get her column, the column we were talking about where she wrote about Rihanna and Chris Brown and other columns, at the Patriot Ledger. That's Patriot Ledger, LEDGER.com. And that starts tomorrow morning, PatriotLedger.com, and you'll be able to pick up Wendy Murphy's column there. She's an excellent host, an excellent guest, and an excellent writer when it comes to these types of cases. I'm going to take another break and see if I can get any better signal getting through to Robin Sachs. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
All right, we're back. My disappearing DA has been tracked down. Hi, Robin. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Good. So when I try to call you, this is what I get. You have, it says it's a Verizon. Of course, I won't share the number, but it says the Verizon customer you are trying to contact is unavailable, and then it says 1-30264. I said, okay, I'm not sure what that is. That must be some California talk. Maybe California's out of money and they shut down all your cell towers. Is that what's going on?
Or maybe my phone knew it was you and decided to
Okay. Am I getting that? You're getting the shot here. Okay. You see, I was trying to set up a thing tonight with getting Leonard Padilla, Geraldo, Andrew Peterson to come on my show and all arm wrestle. And then whoever wins the arm wrestling match will have, it's kind of like a triathlon. They can go and they can do an X's and O's thing. And then they can play maybe solitaire and see who wins that.
I would have loved to see that.
Oh, my God. You know, I've been getting trashed for the last 2 weeks here big time by all the, I'll just say it, they're nuts. For Drew Peterson, I'm being picked on for having him on the program. And the guy in Chicago, this man cow or whatever the hell his name is, I don't know what that is, but that is arranging the boxing match between Drew and Geraldo is, I'm not sure what he's getting, and I don't really give a damn, but the whole aspect is I don't care if you're Drew Peterson or if you're Jack Smith and you are in the news. You may be a suspect in a crime. You say that someone in the media has been harassing you. I'm going to invite you on the program. You can talk about that. But then all
this... it's actually really funny that you mentioned that. Susan Murphy Milano, you know, one of my partners in crime.
Yep.
On Justice Interrupted Radio, a little, you know, shameless self-promotion there.
You're getting good at that, yeah.
And she and I had a conversation today, and we were talking about some people who, we'll call them key players in the Drew Peterson case, and I suggested that perhaps we bring some of maybe these key players on, as unsavory as they may be, and Susan's immediate response was, well, I'm not participating in that interview because, you know, she's right. She's a woman of morals and standards. And then I said, but we're journalists. And we have, you know, we have to get out of our advocate roles and look at this. And like you, you're, you know, background in law enforcement and certainly have your own lenses in which you look at the world. But, you know, these people deserve the stage so we can comment and learn and understand and see them for who they are. So I say kudos to you.
But it goes too far when it becomes a sideshow, when it becomes a boxing match with Geraldo. I want Geraldo and Peterson to come on the show and talk about Drew Peterson's allegation that Geraldo was feeding him lines. That Drew Peterson says that I was going to answer a question this way and Geraldo stopped me and said, no, just start again and maybe answer it that way. That's a serious allegation. I don't want them to come on and have a boxing match, for God's sakes. In my opinion, I think Geraldo would kick Peterson's ass. But when it becomes a sideshow like that, that's wrong. When you get Leonard Padilla on there talking about his dog that he had when he was a kid, because he's running out of things to say, you're getting away from the seriousness of the story, and you're getting into it's all about Leonard or it's all about Drew. But anyway, I'm not sure if you can even comment on this case, but I'm hearing tonight and actually reading that TMZ is reporting that Rihanna and Chris Brown are back together again. I heard you the other night on your Justice Interrupted radio show, which, by the way, is heard on Blog Talk Radio Tuesday nights. There, I'll give you a shameless plug, too.
I like that. I like it.
Talking about the picture. Now, I've had Wendy Murphy on tonight, and I've had Pat Brown on tonight. And I've talked about this tonight. I don't have a problem with the picture being released as long as it's doing good. What I have a problem with is the leak, how it was released, because there's this blinders in society today with the culture of domestic violence, the epidemic that it is, that some people just don't care. Some people say it's nobody's business but the two people. But I was also looking at a picture of Nicole Brown Simpson today, and I was looking at the Rihanna picture, and the similarities were eerie. And it's the big picture about domestic violence and how in this country and in your country and across the world, and in some places it's just plain and simply allowed, we're just not doing a good enough job on it. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that from the standpoint of being a prosecutor and being someone who is going to, you know, being the person who potentially could go into court and actually be the one trying this kind of case, you certainly don't want any sort of appearance of impropriety. And in a case like this, where there is going to be questions about whether or not there's, you know, whether or not Chris Brown's being treated differently because he's a celebrity, whether or not we're, you know, treating him with the even hand that we should, the fact of the matter is then when you have the leak and the financial gain, then it all of a sudden calls into question the Los Angeles Police Department, people who may be working on the case,
yep.
And then what the motives behind, you know, a case going to trial or being filed, is it being done for, you know, to help bootstrap somebody's career in the media light and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's good for the case. I have heard the arguments and understand the arguments that, it's, you know, we can look at these as opportunities, but I think that while when in terms of the pendency of a case, I think it does no good for society when the damage has been done at this exact moment to bring that picture to light. I think there's a lot of ways to educate people on domestic violence and a lot of people to bring the greater issue to light without having to release the picture.
I agree. But I do disagree a little bit, and that's why we're friends, because we can do that. The whole aspect is we hope that this turns out good, and that there is, I'm not sure if that's proper English, but anyway. There's some education that comes forward to the public about domestic violence and the evils therein. What's going on with you? You've got a book that's available for pre-order right now. Tell us a little bit about that before we let you go.
It is. I do. It is Child Molesters and Predators, and it's a sex crimes DA answers parents' 100 most asked questions. And I have to say, I'm very proud of this book because it is really informative. It's straight shooting. There is no misinformation. It really is all about how the system works, but also not just how the system works with sexual assault. I break it up into six different parts where I discuss how to prevent sexual abuse and child sexual abuse, how to talk to kids, how to educate kids about safety based on their developmental abilities, but then also go through, take it beyond the preventative and, you know, worst case scenario, if it does happen, what to expect from the process, medical exams, testifying in court, support people that can be there. And it's real boilerplate, easily understood, simple language. It's in paperback so that I tried to make it so mm-hmm. that I got the least profit possible so that I could give the best deal, or my publishers could give the best deal to the community out there, because I find that so many people ask me the same questions time and time again. You know, how do I know if my kid's telling the truth? How do I, do I let my kid sleep over somebody else's house? What happens if I don't, get a good feeling about a teacher or a counselor? What do I do about it, and so forth? And I literally answer every question that I have been asked, and then some.
Yeah, and that's about time that we see more of this, because these are the questions that people, we hope to God that they never have to go through, but they certainly, when they do go through, need to have some answers. Robin Sachs, ADA, out of Los Angeles County, thank you. And remember, Tuesday nights on Blog Talk Radio, Justice Interrupted, and soon I think you guys are going to be on the Home Shopping Channel, aren't you?
QVC, selling consumer something.
Yeah, that's right.
Anything. Anyway, thank you, Dana. It's always a pleasure. You know we love you.
Okay, we'll talk
Bye-bye.
Soon. Bye-bye. That's tonight's show. Again, go to scaredmonkeysradio.com to listen to all podcasts of past shows, commentaries. Leave your comments, good or bad, and if you think I've been too easy on Drew Peterson, yeah, I'll take that. That's no problem. You can read all the comments about my recent interview with Drew Peterson and Joel Brodsky, and again, I want to make it perfectly clear, what they're doing right now is just plain wrong, and it takes away from the seriousness of the case. That's it. Good night, and we'll see you again real soon.
been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.